Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Mike, I was in a real dilemma. I have pantsuits in nearly every color. Except purple. And so, I've got to get appropriately attired. Okay. So, repeat after me. I, state your name.
I, Mike Hammer.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith.
And allegiance to the same.
And allegiance to the same.
I'm just a fool.
That says it all, ladies and gentlemen. An afterthought to the clown act in the White House. Welcome to the Savage Nation. It's open mic to Mike Friday. Frankly, it's very depressing. It's one of the worst weeks in American history. It began last Friday with the dictator Obama granting amnesty. They said to 800,000. Today, Luis Gutierrez said it's 1.2 million. Remember I've been saying it's at least a million? Well, it was confirmed today that it's at least 1.2 million non-citizen invaders, illegal aliens, however you want to put it, granted amnesty by Obama with hardly a peep from anyone. And it ended with the president. It's not over yet. There's still a few hours left in the day. It ended with the president yesterday or the day before pulling off an executive this or that to make certain that documents are blocked, which will implicate him in the death of Brian Terry and hundreds of Mexican citizens. And, you know, I'll tell you why it's so depressing. I found a few other stories. I don't want to really get you down today, but I guess some of you are down already. They picked someone for the National Labor Relations Board that, according to Fox News, is tied to the mobs and corruption. A mob lawyer was put on the National Labor Relations Board. This union was indicted, many of their members thrown in prison by Chris Christie when he was a U.S. attorney in the area. And here this administration, this corrupt gangster administration, there's no other words for it. Obama pick for NLRB was top lawyer for union, tainted by mob ties and history of corruption. What amazes me about all of this is how anyone could vote for a Democrat, especially a Democrat machine as corrupt as this one. I could see if you're getting the grift from it. I could see if you're getting the vigorish from it. I could see if you're on welfare. I could see if you're getting benefits from the administration. How could any working person vote for this corrupt administration when it is so flagrantly corrupt? I'll never understand. And that brings me back to Romney. I came to a very sad conclusion today. You want to hear what that conclusion is? Because we've all been wondering, why is Romney so weak? Why is Romney so milquetoast? Why is Romney so compliant? Why is Romney so, well, just so Romney-like? And you know what occurred to me? It's not that there's anything wrong with Romney. It's not that Romney's a bad man. Romney's a clean man. He's a good man. I believe that the corruption and the evil that has seized this nation under this administration is so overwhelming and so deeply wired that it's almost impossible to overturn. And I believe Romney knows that. I believe that Romney understands how corrupt they are, how evil they are, and how almost impossible it is to overturn this evil and corruption. And I believe that in his heart of hearts he'd like to, but even he knows it's almost impossible. I want to direct you to three articles I posted on MichaelSavage.com. The top one is from the Washington Times, Obama's Socialist Designs. The next one is Obama opens the White House to gay vandals. You've got to see these pictures. Obama invited gay radicals into the White House, and they posed for pictures underneath Ronald Reagan, giving the middle finger at Ronald Reagan. If this doesn't symbolize the gang, the degeneracy of this administration, what does? The fact that they picked the mob lawyer for the NLRB? The fact that Hillary Clinton joked about pantsuits and threw in the words U.S. Constitution as an afterthought as she swore in another stooge in the State Department? So let me begin with the first article. You can call me at 1-800-449-8255. It's open mic to Mike Friday. I don't know what you'd like to talk about, but I'm open to any topic. I want to read you the first article because it's so well written. Normally, I don't like to read articles. It was written by a gentleman who fills in for me, Jeff Kuhner, who writes for the Washington Times. He's a history professor, so therefore he's an educated man as opposed to most in the media. And he writes this. Well, President Obama is gradually transforming America into a socialist authoritarian state. This is the real meaning of his recent decision to grant backdoor amnesty to young illegal immigrants. Mr. Obama is behaving like a Latin American strongman who asserts arbitrary power and ignores the rule of law. He is assaulting the very pillars of our constitutional republic. Last week, the administration announced that it will stop deporting young illegal aliens. The policy shift affects as many as 800,000 illegal immigrants. Pause. Today we learned from Luis Gutierrez that it's at least 1.2 million. I'll continue. Mr. Obama's order lifts the fear of deportation. It also grants them work permits. Mr. Obama has waved his magic wand and converted the immigration status of countless aliens, flipping them from illegal to legal residents. The order applies to those who entered America before the age of 16 and so forth and so on. And then he goes on. The policy change is a blatant attempt to bribe the Hispanic vote prior to the November election, a key constituency Obama must win. Let me pause there. You're looking at bribery. You're looking at the violation of the Constitution. You're looking at bribery. I'll go on. Yet the order is more than crass partisan politics. It is an ominous usurpation of centralized power, a naked attempt to entrench an imperial presidency. Obama lacks the legal authority to grant amnesty. He is not a monarch or a tyrant with unlimited discretionary authority. Rather, he is confined by our constitutional system of the separation of powers and checks and balances. The Constitution is crystal clear. Congress has the sole power to craft immigration policy. Obama's actions are flagrantly anti-democratic. His goal is simple: to destroy the American nation. For decades, our supposed betters have encouraged open borders and unlimited third world immigration. Corporatist Republicans seek to import cheap labor. Liberal Democrats want to import millions of potential voters. The middle and working class, however, have been decimated. Their wages have eroded. Crime has skyrocketed. Border states in the South are overwhelmed. And hospitals, schools, and welfare services have been strained to the breaking point. Illegal immigration is slowly bankrupting America. Now Mr. Obama has established a magnet for millions more to come. Aliens know they can wait out Uncle Sam. Eventually, amnesty will be granted. U.S. national sovereignty, the rule of law, and our constitutional republic are being sacrificed on the altar of multiculturalism and the creation of a Democrat-ruled one-party state. The administration has whetted the insatiable appetite of leftist Hispanic activists. The logic is inexorable. If a path to legalization can be paved for young illegal immigrants, then why not all 12 million to 20 million aliens in America? Mr. Obama clearly hopes to galvanize the Hispanic community and to build a permanent liberal ruling coalition by massively expanding the Democratic base. Today it is piecemeal amnesty. Tomorrow it will be wholesale legalization. The American electorate will be transformed, thereby entrenching Obamaism for decades to come. In short, Mr. Obama is slowly erecting a leftist state. This is what nationally syndicated radio talk show host Michael Savage has been warning for years. The combative conservative show, The Savage Nation, reaches 10 million listeners every week. Almost alone among major conservative commentators, Mr. Savage has been sounding the alarm about Mr. Obama's creeping dictatorship. His latest blockbuster, Trickle Down Tyranny, HarperCollins 2012, is a must-read, well-written and concise. The book provides a detailed, comprehensive account of the administration's rampant corruption and numerous abuses of power. It has one overarching central theme. Mr. Obama is a radical leftist carrying out a Venezuela-style revolution. Mr. Savage calls the president a fiscal Marxist and a new Hugo Chavez, determined to dismantle American capitalism and constitutional democracy. Mr. Savage discusses almost every one of Mr. Obama's power grabs. Obamacare, the Dodd-Frank financial reform, the de facto nationalization of General Motors and Chrysler, the drive to create a green economy through administrative fiat, the numerous policy czars who have cabinet-level powers but no accountability or congressional oversight, the National Defense Authorization Act, which enables the president to detain any U.S. citizen indefinitely under suspicion of being a terrorist, the push to censor the Internet, the illegal war in Libya, the massive expansion of government through out-of-control spending and record deficits, and the administration's criminal involvement in gun-running to Mexican drug cartels. According to Mr. Savage, Mr. Obama's aim in the U.S. is similar to Bolshevik leader Vladimir Lenin in Russia, to create the Union of Socialist States of America, the USS of A. The president is a Leninist bent on forging a new world order based on economic collectivism, world government, and an internationalist ruling class. The key to achieving his dream is to eradicate the American nation. This is why for years, Mr. Savage has been pounding the importance of borders, language, and culture. The ultra-left's mission is not only an economic revolution, but a cultural one, transforming America into a bilingual, multicultural socialist empire. Mr. Savage understands that the battering ram is massive, unlimited immigration, thereby smashing our historic and demographic core. Such profound social engineering requires state coercion and centralized rule. We must be compelled to abandon self-government in favor of soft tyranny. This is why Mr. Savage darkly warns that our freedoms may vanish in a second Obama term. We will very likely not survive as a free nation after four more years under Obama's rule, he writes. Mr. Savage is right. Mr. Obama is a dangerous demagogue who believes he is above the law. Like many leftists, he is obsessed with amassing power. His amnesty order marks a major step toward an arbitrary statist regime that willfully tramples on the Constitution. The USS of A is being born. Written by Jeffrey T. Kuhner, columnist at the Washington Times, a fill-in sometimes on the Savage Nation. The fact of the matter is, this is an out-of-control presidency. It is criminal. It is corrupt. And I'll be back in a moment.
Savage.
Brought here on slave ships.
Oh, God help me.
Whether they signed in at Ellis Island or they crossed the Rio Grande, their diversity has not only enriched this country, it helped build the greatest economic engine the world has ever known. Hungry.
So you see, to Obama, whether you came here legally or illegally, whether you came through Ellis Island or swam across the Rio Grande, whether you waited in line or jumped the line, makes no difference. Because to Obama and Eric Withholder, there is nothing but parity in all acts and in all people. That's multiculturalism. That's affirmative action. That's plain stupid. Now let's go to the callers. 1-800-449-8255. You're welcome to call on any of the issues that I mentioned. The article is great. There are many, many others. Germany kicked Greece out of the euro. It just happened minutes ago. Germany kicked Greece out of the euro. That's interesting. Greece didn't elect to go out of the euro? Did they? No, I don't mean the dollar euro. I mean the ball game euro. I walked around San Francisco last night after the show, and every bar I went to, I saw idiots staring at screens. Young people, idiots who will vote. They were obsessed with the soccer game on the screen. And I said, we have become Uruguay. America has finally become Uruguay. We already had a large mass of idiots who were interested in baseball and football. Now, with massive immigration from third world countries, we have a large majority of people who are interested only in some ball bouncing around in front of their eyes. Now, I say to each his own. But it's because of this obsession with sports that we have such a poor political class. Nevertheless, that's my opinion. I'm from another generation. And if you care to comment on my comments, please call another show and save it for them, because I'm not interested in what you think of me. I'd rather talk about the news. And we are open to any topic that is in the news, including Hillary Clinton joking about the U.S. Constitution as an afterthought while talking about her pantsuits and swearing in a stooge in the State Department. Let us begin in Houston, Texas. Brandon, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I tell you one thing. I'm just so disgusted every day when I listen and I look at the plan of attack that Romney's taken against Obama and the administration. I mean, I don't think that Obama and Eric Holder and them could be giving us more of a reason or things to look at and point out every day and just go full blast to the American public at how bad these people are and how bad they're screwing up this country. But the more and more I look at Mitt Romney and try to see how he could be better, he doesn't seem like he can stand up to Obama and tell the American
public. Well, here's the problem. Here's the problem. I think that the corruption and evil is so powerful. I believe that the gang that has taken over America is so evil and so dangerous that the Republicans are cowering from them. That's the utter reality of what I've come to conclude. And frankly, it frightens me and it sickens me. I don't believe that there is an opposition party anymore. I believe they've been nullified. I believe they've been gelded. I believe they've been bought and sold and told, shut your mouth, dummy up, and we'll make sure that you get a little bit of what's left in the Treasury every year. Just keep your mouth shut, keep your nose clean, and let us rape and pillage any way we wish. Don't make much of a fuss about anything. Make an occasional fuss, and we'll let you get away with it. Otherwise, well, we're just going to take care of you the way we take care of various and sundry things in this country. Just remember Marcy Park. Just remember all of the good things that happened in this country when the Clintons ran this country. I have a fear that that's what they've done to every Republican in this country. There's no other explanation for this level of corruption, evil, and criminality to go unnoticed and unpunished other than the Republicans have been pushed into a corner with fear.
Savage.
Welcome back to the USS of A, the United Soviet States of America, under the dictator Obama, a man who, with the stroke of a pen, granted amnesty to over 1.2 million, at least, illegal aliens, who is hiding papers that will incriminate him in the worst gun-running scandal from the White House ever, and, of course, with the complicity of the Maoists, the Leninists, and the utter fools in the media, he's getting away with it. And, of course, since there's no opposition party, in my opinion, because they've been either threatened. I have a feeling they've been threatened with a Marcy Park job. There's no other explanation for it. I believe that the gang that seized control of America is so ruthless and so dangerous that the Republicans have been threatened into submission. There's no other explanation. How do you explain it? Jimmy in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation from WOR.
I think the Republicans, by and large, are not too well informed and maybe are a little bit afraid to say what some of them might start thinking. But I wanted to say that your beginning of the show, talking about the socialist and Marxist movement to make world government, you know, the communist press, even going back to Lenin and Stalin, talked about it. They didn't even hide it. They called it the New World Order. They talked about having a world economic system, and that's going to make it easier to get world government. And in the early 50s, the U.S. government did a study of the tax-exempt foundation. It was known as the Reese Committee Report on the tax-exempt foundations, and a couple of hundred pages of proof showing Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, and Carnegie are all working to merge America into a world government. So you have
Let's pause right here for a minute, because I don't want to just knee-jerk agree with you or laugh at you. We know it's true, but, you know, Jimmy, let's be objective about this for a moment. With international trade, with international internet information sharing, isn't there already a world government?
Well, it's the beginning of it, but they're going to tighten it and tighten it and tighten it until it becomes a world dictatorship.
So what is it that the average American should fear about the emerging mega world government run by who? Some bureaucrats in the UN? Is that basically what they want? They want to erase national sovereignty. They want to equal everyone's pay around the world where we're all serfs. Is that it?
Yes, something like that. Each country will become basically a state, whereas we have all the states we have now, and that, then we have the federal government. Every country become a state in the world federal government. In other words, we as voters in New York or in California, wherever we are not going to have much say in the world government. It's sort of
do we have much say right now? We have many dictators like Jerry Brown in California, who is put in there by the unions, who does what he wants and gets away with it because he owns the entire press. So tell me why there's a difference in a new world order than that we have already from the corruption that we have. For example, in New York State, Governor Cuomo. Governor Cuomo just quelled the reportage of teachers' ratings in New York State. He, with the stroke of a pen, said, no, you cannot see the ratings of teachers because the unions don't want anyone to see how bad the teachers are. So we have dictatorships across 50 states already. What difference would it make if they're from Nairobi or from or Beijing? We have the dictators in Albany and in Sacramento.
Well, it'll just get tighter. Right now, we still could complain. At some point, we can't even complain about it. And I'm thinking, at the worst end, the ultimate goal, we may have death camps here. I know people don't want to believe that, but America has always been the number one target, has always been the one country stopping the world from falling into that type of problem. And now we're under direct assault at every level. And the communists right about that, attacking
Bush. Well,
Jimmy,
let's slow down for a minute. Do you believe, as I do, that Obama was handpicked by the international movement to be this president, that he has been cultivated for many years to become the president?
I think so. In fact, I've personally known communist families, and whenever they had kids, we used to joke about he or she may grow up to be the next president. It's sort of like people in some religions that they think.
No. I'm talking about Barry Obama.
Yes.
Was he hand selected? Was he hand picked? Were the skids greased for this guy from Hawaii forward? Because there were communist millionaires in Hawaii back in the 60s who used to hold salon meetings. I can name them. BJ is one of their initials. A long-time rich communist family, deeply enmeshed in the saga of Barry Obama. I believe they created this man.
He was helped every step of the way, he and many others, but he was the one that rose to the top because he had direct connections to the highest level.
Let's not look at the obvious. They picked him. You know, I used to be a national science consultant for a textbook company. Do you know that they had to recolor the drawings of the children in the books because the color of the paint that was used was not acceptable to a sufficient number of buyers of the books? They had to be changed in order to appeal to certain audiences in America. Are you telling me that they don't understand that, I mean, are you telling me? I mean, you understand what I'm saying to you.
Yes, definitely. Race is a big issue. In fact, if you look at the black, Hispanic, and Asian leadership, the cultural and political leadership, it's almost entirely hard left. That's why the radical Ted the Red Kennedy, the immigration bill he made, they're purposely trying to increase the number of the people who will vote hard left. And even if they're not willingly doing it.
If Obama grants amnesty to 20 million or 30 million illegals, which is likely in his term, remember, he's not finished yet. He just tested it with the 1 million children. That means next month he can make it another category of another 10 million. And he can then grant amnesty to all of them before the election. Listen, demography is the nation. Demography is the nation. By bringing in people from third world dictatorships who don't even have the slightest idea of what a democracy is. And let's not forget, Jimmy, that most of these illegals come from horrendous nations where there's nothing but socialist, Marxist dictatorships. They haven't the slightest idea what freedom is. And so if you then bring them in here and you do not acculturate them to what freedom is, what democracy is, what the responsibilities are, you are in essence importing the exact same criminal system that they ran away from.
Yes, and the leadership has a plan to control their thought patterns. They talk about thought patterns, makes voting patterns. It's the peaceful evolution. It's revolution by evolution.
If the Republican Party has been compromised, what are we the people supposed to do? The Tea Parties were a new force, And they scared the heck out of both parties, and they were killed by both parties. Make no mistake about it, Mitt Romney hates the Tea Party members. Mitt Romney is afraid of the Tea Party members. Look what they just did to Congress in Weston in Florida. Do you know that the Republicans themselves gerrymandered him out of office?
Well, you know, when that little guy, the little so-called comedian, Bill Maher, talked about West and then started talking about the Republican Party is the party of apes. That is racism. But our party is too stupid to fight back and accuse them of racism. And the Democrats would use it. They're always.
Well, Alan West could take one low-class vaudevillian of the lowest order. He's the type that used to appear in burlesque houses. And now he's passing himself off as something more. I dare him to say one thing like that to Alan West's face, a certified war hero. I've had dinner with Alan West. I met his wife and children. He's a sterling man. He's a great American. As I say, he could snap with one finger of one hand. So let's not even bring up that burlesque loudmouth. He's of no consequence to me whatsoever. We're talking about bigger issues than a burlesque comedian on HBO. That's all. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to the next caller. San Antonio, Mike, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Doc, I'm a friendly talk yesterday with six Border Patrol agents down here. While they had just spent 2 hours chasing four illegals through the bush and had them in the back of the truck, while I was talking to these guys who were doing the paperwork, I said something, I mentioned Savage. They stopped everything they were doing, and they said, if we don't have another voice, he said, look what they just did to us, Obama. They feel neutered by this signing of the pen.
Let me tell you something. This illegitimate president, if he had his way, he'd arrest the Border Patrol agents, and he'd let 30 million Mexicans swarm into America. The man is working for a foreign nation. The man is a criminal, and we need a Republican opposition to impeach him, period. What else can I say about it?
They love you, Doc.
Well, I'm doing what I have to do. I am the son of an immigrant. My ancestors came here and waited online. They broke their hearts trying so that I could have a better life. I am man-child in the promised land, and I have an obligation both to my ancestors and to my nation to do the best I can to uphold the Constitution as a talk show host who has been granted freedom of speech, who enjoys freedom of speech, to say it like it is. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Get over already, Obama, with the race story, and let's look at him as a president. The fact of the matter is he's a corrupt president. He's an incompetent president. And so if you want to take corruption and incompetence and bundle them in one word, you could say he's evil. He just invoked executive privilege because he's hiding something. Now, let's be clear about this fast and furious gun running. Let's be very clear. There are certainly political aspects to the story. There's no question the Republicans are trying to smear Obama. As in any such case, there's always political elements. But let's not forget that a U.S. Border Patrol agent with a name and scores of Mexican citizens have been murdered with weapons that the U.S. Justice Department lost track of that they shipped to Mexico. In a nutshell, for those of you who are too dumb to remember, the feds released some 2,500 firearms to Mexican drug cartel members in an effort to track gun trafficking patterns. Really, it was to create a case to eliminate the Second Amendment. It's in my book, Trickle Down Tyranny. But the weapons disappeared, the body count began to grow, and now the scandal has revolved. So Obama asserts executive privilege Wednesday regarding documents that might provide some clarity. And so therefore, this privilege assertion, which comes 15 months after Obama claimed that neither he nor Withholder knew about it, the fact of the matter is they know about it, and they knew about it from the beginning because they orchestrated it. And so, therefore, the House voted a contempt citation against Withholder on Wednesday, and the full House could do the same as early next week, although I doubt it. with the Democrats being as corrupt and as criminal as they are, I doubt very much they will uphold the rule of law. But now you have Obama attempting to derail the entire process by asserting executive privilege. You would say it's a principal claim to protect the executive. Everyone with any knowledge of what this is a Nixonian cover-up. And the fact of the matter is, this cover-up needs to be exposed, and we will see that Attorney General Eric Withholder and President Malbama seem to be directly involved in the whole scheme of fast and furious guns to Mexico. No, I don't give him the benefit of the doubt, nor should you. 1-800-449-8255. Now, again, 2,500 firearms disappear. People die. What happens if you legally own two or three guns in your house? You own two or three guns. And you then lend these guns to some people, some shady people in town, and a robbery is committed, or worse yet, a murder is committed. You, my friends, would be arrested for complicity in the robbery or the murder. But if the crime is big enough, as I've said many times, if the crime is big enough, you become Treasury Secretary. And if the crimes are really big, you become President. We had John Corzine, former Goldman Sachs CEO, former Governor of New Jersey, former U.S. Senator, lost $1.5 billion. He's not been indicted yet. Why? Because the crime was big enough, the connection's deep enough, you get away with it. On the other hand, if you're poor and you steal a sandwich at a Subway, you will be, pardon me, you'd be arrested immediately, probably to 30 days in jail for stealing a sandwich if you were starving. You steal enough, nothing happens to you. $1.5 billion disappears, no indictments. Or then you have Jamie Dimon. Probably his name was Diamond, and they converted it somewhere along the line from Ellis Island to Demon. And I would say that the latter is closer than Diamond to what the man really is. I would say he should change the spelling to D-E-M-O-N. But nevertheless, that's one man's opinion. You have Jamie Dimon, Demon, Diamond, Diamond, Demon, Diamond, Diamond. Again, billions of dollars disappear in his company. And what happens? He's called before Congress. They don't even give him a slap on the wrist. He goes home. He has a fine scotch or a fine cognac, and nothing happens. You, on the other hand, if you're working in a company, you get behind on payments for your child's cancer treatment. And let us say you borrow money out of the company treasury for 30 days by juggling the books, hoping to pay it back. You get caught, you go to jail for 5 years. See, isn't America great? That's why they say in America the streets are paved with gold. I, of course, changed that to the streets are paved with yolds. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Let's have a little music, Ray, because I need a break from all of this pain. Yes, I'm feeling real pain. This is going to be a heck of a weekend for me. So let's play a little music, Dave. It doesn't require much other than hitting a button. Can you pull that off? See, now that leads me to the next question for the show. You notice how I just gave you my all and then went to a music bumper in order to catch my breath? I'm starting to think about the live events that I'm thinking of doing. How do I do that for 90 minutes if I don't have music in the background? No ads, no breaks. How am I going to talk to you for 90 straight minutes? In other words, I can give you a spritz, a 2-3 minute spritz that's brilliant, but I can't do it for 90 minutes straight. What do you recommend I do during the intervals? Play the music. Well, you can swing and you can groove and you can really start to move it at the hop. Where the jockey is the smoothest and the music is the coolest at the hop. See, now I can come back again because I took a breather in my voice. See, that's why politicians speak in sound bites. You can't do 60 minutes of anything without sounding foolish unless you read a teleprompter or unless you're Bill O'Reilly and you basically read like a rigid stick from the Manual of Leprechaunism. How else can you do? If you're doing a creative live performance, unless you're Bill O'Reilly who stands there like a wooden stick in the mud, I have no idea what people's tastes are. But why would they go listen to a man like him who they could see on television? Yet he packs him in. He brings in that second-rate comedian who nobody would book anywhere else on earth, as if he's something, you know, like Metallica. And they go see him. I don't even know what people go to these events for. Why would you go to see me when you could get me for free on radio? Well, me, it's another story. Because I have a mystique about me, and I'm sort of a legend. No one remembers what I even look like anymore. You don't even know if I want you to see me. It's like, I remember when I was young and I was an avid reader, so I would read novels, right? And they'd show a picture of the author, and there he was, fishing off the Keys in Florida, vigorous looking, you know, hairy chest, salt and pepper hair, you know, that kind. And then you actually see him in person later on. He's a frail, broken down, you know what I'm saying? Like an old gray man. It's awful to see that. And in later pictures, it's like, you know, this is what happens to you. So maybe it's best to stay in the background at the end of the day. Play the music now. Now, give it up. A punch job.
I can't make up my mind which one you are.
Looking into a trip, a summer trip, family again. They're normal. They're not like me. I'm not a normal person. I pride myself on being not wild and crazy, but definitely not a normal person. I'm not a normal path. Luckily, they are. And I have trouble with normal behavior. I have trouble with normal activities. I have trouble with normal ideas. I have trouble with normal diets. I have trouble with normal schedules. I have trouble with normal people who believe that Republicans and Democrats are different. I have trouble with normal paths who believe Romney's going to save us. I have trouble with virtually everything that's normal. But normal people are thinking about vacations now. In fact, super normal people have all planned their vacations. If you're super normal, you know where you were going in July last December and you booked it. But if you're just averagely normal and you have a little extra time and money, you're actually thinking about what to do now. So I'm thinking about Alaska. But then when you analyze it, I don't know what to do in Alaska. I have Alaska affiliates, so I want to be very careful now with what I say. And of course, the great genius, the grand genius of all political geniuses came from Alaska. We don't know where she is these days. Where is she, the great Alaskan mama? Where'd she go? Mush! Mush! Mush, I say. Wait, mush! I can see Russia from here! Mush! Where is she? I don't know what to do in Alaska. I want to go up there, but I don't want to look at a bear. I feel bad going. It's packed now with people who go to hotels to see a bear eating a salmon. I could see people in Brooklyn eating salmon. Savvy.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking it. Oh, lot of shaking going on.
It is the Savage Nation. You know, yesterday the show was over. It was like a great night in San Francisco. And I hung out. I got to just give you a little, you know, sketch of what it's like. I happen to be a loner. I enjoy being alone. I mean, I do like people up to a certain point, but I do like walking around the city at night alone. Collar turned up, hat turned down, and a certain friend in my pocket. Walking around the downtown, looking at the skyscrapers, all of the bums basically were gone, and the occupiers were busy collecting whatever they collect and smoking the medical marijuana. It was a beautiful moment. Actually, a couple of hours, wandered around, had a few drinks, went into a Vietnamese restaurant at 9 o'clock by myself, had a dish in a Vietnamese restaurant that I rarely eat in. And then I rested a few hours till a couple of drinks dissipated out of my system. And I drove back over the Golden Gate Bridge maybe 11 o'clock, 11:30, when I was totally clear and beautiful in my own thinking and everything was calm. I love driving later at night when the traffic's gone and the roads are clear and there's a lot of fog and the city is disappearing in the background. The lights on the bridge are there and everything was perfect. And I was listening to some 80s rock and roll and I got this terrible urge. Almost for another time, another place in America, I wanted to be in a sports car that I own. It happens to be an older Ferrari that I almost never drive. And I had the desire to be on that in that car going 120 miles an hour with the top down. Of course, I wasn't. I was in a sedate car doing 55 miles an hour in the middle lane. But did you ever get the desire to just let go and drive as fast as you could for as long as you could? Well, that's, of course, what I felt like doing last night, because the corruption and the crimes and the cover-ups are so evil. You would think that the Democrats would know it. You would think that all of these intelligent people who were showering money upon this evil, corrupt administration would pause for a moment and say, you know, we better slow down because these guys are out of control. We can't be giving them money. They're too corrupt. They're too reckless. We can't support this guy. We got to put somebody else in there. You would think, right? But no, it doesn't happen. And it's how nations die. It's how nations die. Just people can't see what they are doing. They don't want to see. They're blind. And so there's no other party. And I felt kind of empty last night after seeing what Romney had done with the illegal aliens. I saw that the bottom had fallen out of any hopes I had for the opposition party. The bottom had fallen out of any hopes I had to save America. And frankly, it was not a very good night for me. And today is an even worse day, because I see that Romney upped the stakes. In addition to saying the other day to the Hispanic businessmen or whatever they were, that he would grant green cards like green stamps, he now said something that was even more egregious. Beowulf, do you have that new Romney clip? Play it. Just play it.
Okay, he was born to parents, American parents, living in Mexico. When he was five, they left everything behind and started over in the United States. There were times in my dad's life when he lived in poverty. My dad didn't finish college, but he believed in a country where the circumstances of one's birth were not a barrier to achievement, and he wasn't afraid of hard work. He held odd jobs, putting up plasterboard, selling paint. He was lucky enough to live in America, where hard work can turn aspirations into realities. After he became a man in the business world, he got the opportunity to lead a great car company. And ultimately, he became the governor of a great state, the state of Michigan. This is my father's story, but it could be the story of any American.
Well, all right, it's a good story. Of course, he had to do the Mexican tie-in to show how multicultural he really is. Nothing against him. We all come from somewhere else at some point. That is the American way. It's certainly not anything to make a joke out of. But the pandering is something to worry about. Instead of appealing to voters' language and culture, instead of unifying Americans, saying this is a melting pot and we all become Americans, he, like Obama, seems to be saying we don't need to become Americans. We should remember where we came from and glorify where we came from. And that will be good enough for me as well. No, I don't like it at all. And so, therefore, let's go to the callers. It's open mic to Mike Friday. We have a couple of big hours left. I close the last hour by asking you, when I do my personal appearances, my first one is in Marin County, California, on September 22nd at the Great Marin Veterans Memorial Auditorium, a place that I used to have events in, and I know it's going to be sold out. I'm sure of it. We're not selling any tickets right now. I'm just telling you about it. But I'm having a little, not stage fright, but I do radio. And when I do radio, although it's hours a day, I have breaks. I have ads. I have music bumps. I have callers. And I'm having a little bit of a worry here. Like, what do I do for 90 straight minutes on the stage to keep the audience entertained, invigorated, and, of course, not burn myself out? So we're going to take callers on that. We're also going to do some lifestyle questions. If you have a question about God knows I may not be the best person in the world to give you advice on how to run your life, but I can try. I've been around a while. I've done fairly well. I've made my mistakes, and I still do. But many of you don't have an older father. You don't have uncles. You don't have even a father in the family. Many of you don't have a husband in the family. You don't have a brother to turn to, an uncle. If I can be a sounding board for you and you think I make sense in what I say, I'll give it a shot. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Sacramento. Jane, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Thank you, Michael. I was thinking about this a lot. Large screen video movies going of your family and travels and
You know, when I saw that, that's a brilliant idea, Jane. In other words, in addition to me doing my normal, you know, political stuff, I could revert to a never-before-seen Super 8 and 8mm movies I have going back to the 1960s. Back to my plant collecting in the islands, in the Fiji Islands, when people were laughing at me for doing things like that. I was 30 years ahead of my time. They're amazing movies of the children, the first white child seen amongst all black children in a little village. You'll never believe some of these pictures. It's amazing for me to believe that I've been through so many lives. I myself am like Steppenwolf. I myself have led like a Steppenwolf type of life in the sense
I visualize, as you spoke, I could visualize your son playing with the native sons there. And
he did. All of the kids, these were wonderful children in the village of Namosi in the highlands of Fiji. There were no roads going in. There were no driving roads. You had to hike back into that village. It was totally isolated. I knew that it would change, obviously, 1969, 1970, 71, 72, long before most of the people listening to this show were even born in some ways. I had to take my child there. We took him there, and I had to do whatever I could to raise money in order to do research because no one was funding it. On my way to the doctorate, which I thought would be my union card, to getting my university appointment, but when my turn came, they said white males need not apply, especially white males with nearly 4.0 averages and 16 books to their credit. What we want are dummies. We want dummies with no credentials from no universities so we can turn universities into cesspools. Thank you for the call. It's a good idea. It's a very good idea. And if you think I'm mistaken about the vandalism that's going on in this country, the vandalism of the intellect in the universities, even the vandalism in the White House. Take a look at the website today, Michael Savage. Obama invited a group of gay vandals into the White House who went in front of the picture of Ronald Reagan and held up their middle finger in the White House, and they were not ejected. Instead, this is an example for you, my friends, of the destruction of this nation's culture under this gang that has taken over the country. Okay. What else do we want here? New York, Mary, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please, from WOR.
Hi, I'm thinking in order for you to get a bathroom break, you should use liberals like Obama, an impersonator, of course. He comes out and gives a monologue about his good looks. Or you could have a chorus line of high-kicking dancers of 25 Hillary Clinton lookalikes.
That would be funny. That would be funny. Yeah, no, that would be a heck of a production, but I'm not Lady Gaga. if I had the time and I had the staff, I would create a spectacle on that order with dancing girls looking like Hillary Clinton and Janet Napolitano. That would be fabulous. Just think about what that would look like.
Even better, yeah. Janet Napolitano. 25.
I think a whole chorus line of gals who look like Napolitano and Hillary Clinton dancing on stage would be fun, no question about it. But I don't think I can pull that one off. I just don't have the staff nor the time nor the capacity to be that kind of a Billy Rose impresario. You know what it has to be? It has to be me. It has to be me. It's like, you know, look, the liberals perfected this form, An Evening With. And then they give you, the guy gets up there for 60 minutes, reads from his book, An Evening With. I don't like that holy, you know, the Arts and Cultural Center of the City of San Francisco presents you An Evening With. And you're supposed to be enthralled by some leftist drivel for 60 straight minutes. And he sits there and he sits on the stage set is minimalist because they don't want to invest the money in an actual stage set. And you're supposed to think they're geniuses because they brought out a bar stool for the putts to sit on and give you an anti-American diatribe. But I could reverse it, An Evening With Michael Savage. But that doesn't suit me. I that's not me. I mean, Evening With. What am I going to get up? I mean, I got a great opening for you. Great cheers. And I come out. And then what? Did I reach for my books? What do I do for you for an hour and a half? I don't understand what you want me to do for an hour on stage. I'd like you to tell me. You got to help me with this. Look, it's like when the New Yorker. Remember that New Yorker article? Many of you listened to this, have listened for years. This article was published years ago, August 3rd, 2009, but for months preceding the profile of Michael Savage in the New Yorker, I was reading emails from the gentleman who wanted to interview me, remember? And you were answering whether or not I should let him interview me, and we went back and forth, and it turned out to be part of the interview. That was really very creative, and it wound up to be the best description of Michael Savage as a performer ever done, because the man had been a music critic for the New York Times for many years, and he actually had a musical ear, and he could hear who I really was. And so I'm very, very, was very happy with that interview. But the point is that you participated in that interview in the New Yorker, the New Yorker interview that I'm referring to. It's still the finest thing ever written about me, in my opinion. The thing is, though, it was interactive, written by Kalefa Sena, Party of One, Michael Savage, Unexpurgated. And so, therefore, I'm asking you, if I'm going to do a live performance, as I'm still planning to do, or a series of them, yeah, I need your interaction right now. You got to tell me what else to do. I like the idea of the home movies. I have to speak to the promoter and see if that could be done. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, look, I could talk politics from today until tomorrow, which I've done for the last 18 years. I gave it my all in the first hour. I've told you that we have a constitutional crisis with an illegitimate situation coming out of the White House, and we have an opposition party that is fundamentally neutralized, doesn't exist, because I think they've been threatened with Marcy Park-like behavior from this gang. I personally think that we have a criminal enterprise that's taken over the country. There's nothing I can do about it. I have absolutely no authority, no power. And if this powerful juggernaut called the Republican Party cannot or will not utter a word about the criminality coming out of the White House, we're finished. It's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. What do you want me to say? What do you want me to say? So just about any news story leads him back to a central theme, that leftists are ruining the world or trying to. This is from the New Yorker article from years ago. Have I really changed? After a Somali pirate was captured and brought to New York for trial, he told listeners to expect a backlash. Quote, some terrorist front from Milwaukee Somali community, in my opinion, is already saying, he's a child, he shouldn't be judged already as a man. I haven't seen Al Sharpton yet calling him an environmental warrior. I haven't seen Jesse Jackson saying, we've linked arms and we shall overcome, but don't be shocked. Television viewers may still remember Savage. You know, he goes on and on. It's a pretty good article. Very good article. Some of it's good. Some of it's not current anymore. On his radio show that afternoon, Savage had played tracks by Cannonball Adderley and John Coltrane, and he sought to draw a line connecting the music he loved as a boy, the herbal medicine he practiced as a young man, and the political philosophy he advocates now. In each case, he said, he was after a kind of freedom. And he said that it was the big government liberals who had abandoned freedom and in a broader sense abandoned him. But successful rabble-rousing requires a certain kind of optimism, a belief that sooner or later your compatriots will come to their senses. And part of what makes his radio show so engrossing is its undercurrent of pessimism. Savage never quite seems able to convince himself that the forces of righteousness will prevail. Indeed, he often gives voice to a sneaking suspicion that it doesn't much matter. Sitting on his deck, he cheerfully admitted as much. He said, I watch shows where they're digging up a mummy from 4,000 years ago, bothering a tomb, he said. That person shaved, brushed his teeth with a stick, went to the bathroom, had sex, whatever. And now what? Who the heck knows what his politics were? Across the bay was the Chevron Richmond refinery, half hidden between the hills and the coast. If a terrorist blew it up, it'd be the equivalent of 10 nuclear bombs, he said. I sometimes sit here and think about the fireball. Because of his antipathy for liberals and his incendiary style, Savage is sometimes seen as an heir to iconic radio provocateurs of an earlier era. And then he goes on and he names them and this and that. But when Savage talks about his chief influences, he's most likely to mention the old timers he listened to as a kid in New York. Symphony Sid, the beloved jazz DJ, Mel Allen, the old Yankee play-by-play man, Gene Shepard, the pioneering monologuist. From that perspective, Savage might be merely the latest and probably one of the last in a long line of garrulous old-school New York radio personalities. This is from the New Yorker article, which I just happened to pick up again. You got any Symphony Sid music you could play right now and bump right into it if you can with it? Jumping with my boys, Sid, in the city. Jumping with my boys, Sid, in the city. You know that one, guys? Oh, that was only 17 seconds.
Set.
It is the Savage Nation. So let me read a little bit more from this article. I actually am enjoying it again. I'm going back to the New Yorker article because I got to tell you something. If you're listening to the show and you're a loyal listener, okay, it's really all about me in plain English. You can get the news anywhere. You can get commentary anywhere. But you kind of are into the personality. Let's not fool ourselves. And so the personality is king in talk radio at the end of the day. And after many years, you come to either hate the guy, love the guy, or listen to the guy. It's that simple. Or a mixture of both all the time, love and hate. You don't know what to do with the guy. It's like a relative. Nevertheless, when I grew up, I would read The New Yorker. I was a young kid. I was going to college. I had desires to be a writer. And so The New Yorker was sort of the holy Bible of it, and the holy grail, rather. And they'd have profiles of people who I greatly admired. And to me, I thought it was hitting the absolute big time to have a profile written about you in The New Yorker. Now, maybe that was true or never true. But nevertheless, here I am, 3 years after this was written. It didn't change my life in any way. Nothing changes a person's life. I mean, nothing of this nature changes a person's life. But when you're young, you think certain things will be seminal in the change of your life, and very few things are. In this nefarious manner of just an article about you. It makes no difference at the end of the day. I thought being a writer would change, you know, my life, and I wrote almost 30 books now. I thought getting a doctorate from a great university, I thought it'd be, you know, making a great living. None of that changes your life. At the end of the day, I mean, you want me to go into philosophy at another time, maybe we'll do it another day. But the fact of the matter is, nothing changes your life of these type of things. None of these things fundamentally change the core of your being. You are what Freud said about people. You are who you were at six. Who you were at six, and it shouldn't scare you, is who you are now. And many of us are afraid of that because we don't like ourselves, and we're afraid that people will see that we're imperfect or see that we're a little off key in certain areas. But that's who we are. No one is the same. There's no norm. No snowflake is alike. No person's alike. And to try to adhere to some norm is the hardest thing in the world because it's abnormal to try to adhere to a norm that doesn't exist. You understand what I'm saying? Or is it too esoteric for a radio show, right? Symphony Sid, the beloved DG Day, Mel Allen, the old Yank. You got the Mel Allen piece. It's a high fly ball to center field. You have the Mel. I got to play Mel Allen right now. I love the Mel Allen piece. Gene Shepard, the pioneering monologuist. I never actually listened to Gene Shepard. Everyone says you listen to him. I didn't know who he was, nevertheless. But so many people said you must have listened to him, and I say, yeah.
Going, it is gone. Maris hitting his second homer of the day. And the Yankees' sixth homer.
Now, I was 11. I can see to this day I'm 11 years old in Queens. I have a transistor radio on my shoulder plugged into, just attached to my ear. I'm walking around in corduroy pants or whatever I wore in those days with a polo shirt. And my entire being resonated with Mel Allen's description of that ball being knocked out of the park. Play it again. Just listen to it. Play it again, Sam.
There's a drive. It's a deep right field. That ball is going. It is gone.
Okay, now that's what you call a great announcer. I'm sorry. I got chills up my leg. Like Chris Matthew did listening to Obama. I got the chills up my leg. But I was 11, and I was not paid to be a hack. I was supposed to get chills up my leg listening to Mel Allen when I was 11 years old. The people on MSNBC are not supposed to have chills up their leg watching a criminal enterprise take over the White House. From that perspective, Savage might be merely the latest and possibly one of the last in a long line of garrulous, old-school New York radio personalities. His sensibility isn't so far removed from that of Howard Stern, another kid from New York with a radio show that thrives on provocation and neurosis. But Savage dismisses Stern as both a sophomoric sensationalist and maybe even more damaging, a Long Islander. The form of Savage's show, the quick cuts from one topic to another, the way familiar political observations give rise to baffling digressions, the fluctuating tension between his blue state life and red state message is at least as important as its content, which means that it's hard to understand them and his appeal at second hand. The immoderate quotes meticulously cataloged by the liberal media watchdog site, Media Matters, are accurate but misleading insofar as they reduce a willfully erratic broadcast to a series of political brickbats. You could say something similar about the four books that Savage has placed on the Times bestseller list. By the way, there's six of them right now. You hear? All are political polemics, and none capture the freewheeling sensibility of the show or the complicated personality of the man. Last year, while talk radio, for that matter, TV talk, was obsessed with campaign minutiae, Savage couldn't quite decide how much he cared. Despite his fears about Obama, he was lukewarm in his support of Senator John McCain and frustrated by McCain's faltering campaign. Savage calls him John McShame and often suggests conspiratorially that he didn't really want to beat Obama. Quote, McCain may as well be a fall guy for the New World Order, he said. He told listeners, you'll have to go to one of the other talk shows to get Obama's a Marxist and McCain is a war hero. Adding with a trace of self-pity, I really don't care about it anymore. Then he goes on to one of my books. Savage liked art and... Oh, that's a story. Oh, well, this is pretty good, actually. Looking in retrospect, you could see that I am what, you know... Savage was born the son of immigrants, and like many successful men who started off poor, he loves to talk about the bad old days. His father ran an antique shop on Ludlow Street on Manhattan's Lower East Side, and he put his son to work in the basement, cleaning bronze statues with a toothbrush dipped in a cyanide solution. Apparently, Savage's father believed in the sort of tough love that resembles love only in retrospect. That's true. Quote, it was like an Abraham and Isaac relationship, he writes in Psychological Nudity, adding, I think if he had the rock and knife, I wouldn't be here today. That's great. Who is this guy? I think if he had the rock and knife, it wouldn't be here today. Later in the book, he compares Abraham to an Islamo-fascist. His mother took care of Michael and for a time his younger brother Jerome, who was born blind and deaf and unable to hold himself up, in Savage's words. On the advice of a doctor, Jerome was institutionalized, quote, packed off like an animal to live and suffer and die in silence alone in one New York snake pit after another. Oh, God, I don't want to go into that. Although his father tolerated no discussion of religious faith, Savage was raised in a thoroughly Jewish world, and he still winces when he recalls the time he made his sports car backfire in front of the synagogue during Yom Kippur services. I mocked my own people and my own religion, he says now, because he is a political ally of evangelical Christians. They go on to this now. He's often accused of covering up his Jewish roots or implicitly renouncing them. In fact, I never renounced them. In fact, his delivery is so steeped in American Jewish culture that non-Jewish listeners might sometimes wonder what he's talking about. After the election of 2000, he wrote a scathing ode to Southern Florida and its inhabitants. He called it the land of suntan, Trotskys, and delis, and he lampooned the residents for their loyalty to, quote, Bill, their shameless shagets, and Al, their Shabbos goy. Savage was brought up in a family of Democrats, and it's hard not to read the poem as a complicated homage to his mother who died in Boca Raton in 2003. Savage's child, well, it's pretty good. I don't want to read the whole thing for you. Let me read some of the better part. You know what I'm doing here? Is anyone listening to this anymore? Could you tell me you're listening to? I think it's good stuff right now. I think it's very good. Where's the part where I talk about death? I like that a lot. I want to read the part about the death, how I'm obsessed with death and dying, because that's very important for you. Oh, this goes on and on. It's like pages and pages. Gruffness is his birthright, inherited from a father whose tyrannical strictness became less baffling to Savage as he grew older. Unlike his father, though, Savage is something of a softy, a political idealist, a sucker for a sob story, and a firm believer in the power of friendship. When he invited the journalist into one of his undisclosed locations, he proved to be a first-rate host, chatty and solicitous. A steady supply of beer refills lubricated the conversation. And as the temperature dropped and the sky above Berkeley started to turn orange, he seemed to be working hard to stay suspicious despite himself. On a show the next day, a caller asked how the interview had gone, and Savage described his interlocutor saying, if I told you you looked like Obama, I wouldn't be far from the truth, close quote. Coming from him, this sounded like a deeply twisted compliment. I'm telling you, this guy's a good writer. This is really very good stuff. Now I go into bashing Limbaugh, Glenn Beck. Here it is. Here's the death stuff. Can I go on? In March, Savage turned 67. This was 3 years ago, just so you know. Never thought I'd live this long, he says. He has now lasted a full decade longer than his father did, and he seems to feel that somehow this can't be good news. This is good. You know, this is like a great wine that gets better with time. When he was a boy, his father gave him some instructions that he never forgot. He said to me, "When I die, you can throw me in a garbage can." I mean, it shocked the heck out of me. It really freaked me out. The idea of throwing my poor father in a garbage can. This unsentimental request was also, in a way, a metaphysical brain teaser. Savage was being asked to choose between honoring his father's wishes and honoring his father's body, between obeying him and celebrating him. Although his father was a devout materialist, Savage seems to have spent much of his life searching for the right way to articulate his heritage. For a time in the 80s, and he goes on to my religious meandering. I'm no longer into any religion at all, by the way. I can't take it anymore. I'll tell you, you know what killed it for me? The radical Muslims killed my belief in religion. Did you know that? I know you don't want to hear it. Religious fanaticism, as exemplified by the Islamo-fascists, turned me into a, I don't know, I believe in God, and that's the end of it. I don't believe in a way to God. It's my way. It's my way or the byway. That's all I want to say. He loves to talk about his well-worn Hebrew Bible, which is full of annotations and post-it notes. Despite his alliance with evangelical Christians, he seems untempted by Christianity itself. Quote, "You go to a graveyard and someone's dead and they give you the mumbo jumbo," he told his listeners one afternoon. "You want to believe the resurrection? Do you actually believe it? Many of you do." But another afternoon, he rifled through the book of Revelation in an attempt to explain the latest perfidies of the Obama administration. Quote, "We now have a prophecy emerging in front of our eyes," he said. Ah, here's the good part. I've been looking for this. When Savage gets really apocalyptic, it can be hard to separate his political observations from his medical complaints. And maybe he's not quite convinced that they really are separate. Recently, he has had vision problems which have come to acquire a symbolic significance. Quote, "I feel as though almost I'm losing my sight from looking every day at such horror," he says. "I feel as though my eyes are closing on me because they don't want to see it anymore." When he talks on the air about his homes and hidden locations, he suggests that he's worried about some crazed liberal assassinating him. "I have to watch out for them because they're all psychopaths," he says. Listen to Savage long enough and you may be persuaded to think that liberalism is code for all the stupid things we just can't conquer. Weakness and decadence and human frailty and death itself. Yes, you're right. It is. Near the end of Psychological Nudity, Savage writes, "I'm watching the sands of time fall into the hourglass. There's more sand on the bottom now than there is on the top." That's beautiful. I got to tell you, I'm touched by it. You know, I'm touched by my own quote in a maudlin moment. "I'm watching the sands of time fall into the hourglass. There's more sand on the bottom now than there is on the top." I could break an audience into tears with that line. And he makes reference to his own death with startling frequency a few times an hour, week after week. Just about anything can set him off. A beautiful pair of Shetland sheepdogs in the mall reminds him of the dog's kindly owner, which in turn reminds him of unkind dog owners, which makes him think about Michael Vick's dogfighting operation, which brings to mind dead dogs, which leads him inexorably to a consideration of the old boxeroo waiting at the end of the road for all of I love it. His thoughts on dying are often informed by Buddhist theories of enlightenment and reincarnation. And during one digression, he staged his own afterlife as an improvised two-character dramatic scene. Can I continue with this New Yorker piece? Because here's the best part of it. So here's my, I didn't even know I did this stuff. You could see why I'm not in the Radio Hall of Fame, because if I went in the Radio Hall of Fame, they'd have to eliminate the museum. There'd be nothing to follow this act. During one digression, he staged his own afterlife in an improvised two-character dramatic scene. Here it is. "God, there is no time. The whole thing is all a racket. There's no time. Clocks have no meaning. Dolly was closer to the truth. They're all bent because the hands move, but nothing else moves. So here's what it is. Mike, you're going to be reborn again in Mount Sinai Hospital in the year you were born to the exact same parents, and you're going to go through the very same life again. Michael Savage, deceased." "No, I don't want that." "God, why, it was so bad? You want me to make you a bug?" "Savage, no. But do I have to do that all of it, everything again? The meatball on the wall, the whole thing, the fights in grade school? All over again, love by the sewer plant, the nympho in Alley Pond Park, affirmative action, the radio career?" "God, why, that wasn't good enough for you? Would you like something else?" "Savage, no, God, I'll take it." This is from, this is Beowulf, you got to admit, this is refreshing. It's really good. I would like to know this guy in The New Yorker from August 3rd, 2009. And that guy is me. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What fun I'm having on the show today. Who would think? Who would have think that with the world falling apart like this under this gang, I could still have fun? Well, anyway, it's called gallows humor, I guess. Let's go to a caller before I go back to what I was doing on the Savage Nation. Jack, in Las Vegas, you're up on the Savage Nation.
Hello, Savage. When do you know a marriage is over? I guess it's a
It's very simple.
Question.
Very simple question. Well, the day you tie the knot.
Oh, you're killing me. How would you advise a friend?
Who what?
A friend comes to you and believes that their marriage is over and they're not sure when to actually pull the pin and call it over and file for divorce.
Well, it depends upon the crime against the marriage. I mean, what do marriages break up over? Usually two reasons only, sex or money. And so if there's no sex or money involved in the discord, what's it based upon?
It seems money. One party is
all right, so I was right. Usually someone isn't making enough or someone's spending too much. Or somebody, yeah, that's about it. Someone's not making enough or someone's spending too much. Or someone cheated on someone. Or someone's not doing the right thing at night in the marital bed. There's no other reason for divorce that I could think of. I mean, if you have a companionship, you stay together. If you got a companionship that works, right or wrong?
I think you're right. What about they have two kids?
Well, how old are the kids?
4 and 10.
Oh, that's the problem. My advice to people is always stay together for the children. I'm from the old school. I don't care what the problem is. I don't care who you think you're going to meet. I can guarantee you within 6 months you're going to be back where you were with the other one. So the point is work it out because the children deserve a mother and a father. You know what I'm saying? I'm not Hillary Clinton where a child needs a village. A child needs a mother and a father, not two mommies or two daddies. Thanks for the call. Look, whatever you do, don't turn to the booze. I have a good friend, Doc Kraft. I love this guy. In fact, I'm making him into a modeling a hero on him for my next novel. This guy is so amazing. I don't want to go into it, so we're joking. He doesn't drink. Special forces, musician, doctor. You can't believe this guy. So he doesn't drink. So he says, you know why I don't drink, Michael? I said, why? He says, the five C's, cops, calories, cost, confusion, communicable disease. And he said, you could throw in conception. I said, I'm putting that right in my next novel. I love this. He's like, this guy is a character. He's great. Five reasons not to drink booze. Cops, calories, cost, confusion, communicable diseases, and conception. The guy's right. Boom, cymbal shot. I mean, is he wrong? Right? This year, Savage is celebrating the 15th year of his radio career. I'm concluding now with the New Yorker article. On the air one day, he marked the occasion in typically perverse fashion by thinking of all the listeners who stuck around and all the ones who didn't. Quote, some were 15, now they're 30. Some were 5, now they're 20. They grew up on me. Their fathers are dead. The guys who had it playing in the car are gone. They're still here. They can't believe it. I'm their voice of freedom. I'm the last hope. I'm the beacon. I'm the Statue of Liberty. I'm Michael Savage. I'll be back. That is so good. You know what I should do is I should record this interview. And I don't know, give it as a special reward for those who contribute more than $10 million to my legal fund or something like that. The real Michael Savage, Kalefa Sena on a shock jock's unexpected side. See, I'm just a shock jock. PhD, 30 books, world travels. But just think of me as a shock jock. The real journalists ought to be seen on ABC, CBS, NBC, and MSNBC. There are your real journalists. Those are the ones you should rely upon for the truth. After all, they gave us Obama. Look how that's worked out.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And
now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Play Mitt Romney's pandering yesterday, speaking to a splinter Hispanic group, telling them he would print green cards faster than green stamps. But that wasn't the end of it. Here he's talking up the fact that his father was born in Mexico.
He was born to parents, American parents, living in Mexico. When he was five, they left everything behind and started over in the United States. There were times in my dad's life when he lived in poverty. My dad didn't finish college, but he believed in a country where the circumstances of one's birth were not a barrier to achievement, and he wasn't afraid of hard work. He held odd jobs, putting up plasterboard, selling paint. He was lucky enough to live in America, where hard work can turn aspirations into realities. After he became a man in the business world, he got the opportunity to lead a great car company. And ultimately, he became the governor of a great state, the state of Michigan. This is my father's story, but it could be the story of any American.
My God, and in the clip, he praised America's diversity.
I come to you as a candidate for the president of the United States of America. And I will govern from the principle that while this is a land of extraordinary diversity, there is much more that unites us than there is that divides us. As president, I will stand for a path to legal status for anyone who is willing to stand up and defend this great nation through military service. Those who've risked their lives in defense of America have earned the right to make their life in America.
Well, all the pandering doesn't do him a darn bit of good, of course. Here's Representative Luis Gutierrez and his reaction. Ugh.
He could have simply said, I will let the order of President Barack Obama stand while I work for a permanent solution as president. But he didn't want to say that because he doesn't want to alienate the most extreme sectors of the Republican Party, which of course have advanced his presidency in the Republican nomination. He believes that self-deportation, I mean, what is that? Means pick up your bags and leave. You've right. been here 20 years, pick up your bags and leave. You have American citizen children, pick up your bag. You have a business, pick up your bag. You've been caught up in an immigration system. Your husband or your wife is out there fighting in Afghanistan right now. Pick up your bags and leave. That doesn't fix a broken immigration system.
That's what Romney's weakness got him, an attack. And in the meanwhile, our esteemed Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, is giggling as she swears at an official who apparently loves the color purple.
Mike, I was in a real dilemma. I have pantsuits in nearly every color. Except purple. And so, I've got to get appropriately attired. Okay. So, repeat after me. I, state your name.
I, Mike Hammer.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support and defend.
That I will support and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
That I will bear true faith.
That I will bear true faith.
And allegiance to the same.
And allegiance to the same.
That's our State Department today. And the Justice Department is even lower. Here's Eric Withholder reacting to being charged with contempt by the House of Representatives.
I would say that the action that the committee took yesterday was both unwarranted, unnecessary, and unprecedented.
And all the while, the parents of the slain Border Patrol agent Brian Terry are still waiting for justice.
I think that if he did this, then I think that there's something that they don't want us to know, and there's something to hide.
They're hiding something. They're lying and they're hiding it big time. They're passing the buck. That's how I feel. I got a gut feeling on that. I just know that they're hiding something big. Something happened out there. Well, and worse than what we know.
Here's what's on michaelsavage.com, home of the Savage Nation, where borders, language, and culture reigns. Top article, Obama's socialist designs Michael Savage is right. They say Obama is a dangerous demagogue, and they spell it out. I'm going to read that to you today. The second story should make you get sick. Obama opened the White House to gay vandals who posed for pictures giving Ronald Reagan's portrait the finger. If you don't see what this man has done to this country, if you don't see that he's trashed and destroyed this country, you're blind. But it gets worse. Obama's pick for the National Labor Relations Board was a top lawyer for a union tainted by mob ties and corruption, according to FoxNews.com. It's something out of The Sopranos and The Godfather. Army says the troops are going to be getting ready for an Africa mission. U.S. probe calls for punishment of troops in Quran burning. Oh, Quran burning. German neo-Nazis help Palestinians kill Israeli athletes. That's terrible. That was a long time ago. Muslim sentence for online South Park threat. Taliban kill 23 guests at a hotel that was used for immorality in their sick country. Europe's highest court ruled that if you're on vacation and sick, you can take another vacation if you get sick on vacation. Muslims kill 13 Muslims and wound 100 in Baghdad. Muslims lash teen 100 times for a child out of wedlock. Liberals, are you paying attention? Proof Obama and Holder knew about gunwalking in 2009. Is President Obama a pathological liar? Are you kidding? Savage to Romney, be Scott Walker. Bottom left, Oracle's Ellison is buying an entire Hawaiian island. Military instructor suspended over Islam course. I guess he says what is actually happening in the Islamic world, and that's illegal in Hillary Clinton's America. Trickle-down tyranny is the blueprint for defeating Obama, says the conservative beacon. All this and more right here on the Savage Nation.
Wait, hang on before I go. I read an article on how the economy has affected consumers and that customer service and return policies are really now the main reasons people choose to do business with a company. Case in point, it's time to replace the blinds, shades, or shutters in your home. You take your measurements, you head off to the big home improvement store. Sure, they take your order. But when your window coverings arrive, you find out they don't fit because the schmuck from the plumbing department gave you bad advice. You trudge back and they tell you, sorry, no returns on custom orders. Not at blinds.com. Not at blinds.com. See, even if you mismeasure, which almost never happens, they'll remake it for free. Who does that? There are also over 100 real experts in-house happy to assist. Get free color samples, free shipping, and no sales tax in most states. Plus, expert installers if you need one. That's blinds.com, where their prices absolutely crush home improvement store prices. Blinds.com. I've used them for blinds. I love them. Blinds.com. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Do you think it has had a negative influence on culture in any way?
No, totally positive. It's brought the races together. It put Barack Obama in the presidency. You know, if it wasn't for rap, white people wouldn't have been so open to vote for somebody like Barack Obama. But it was hip-hop 20 years ago, that got people willing to vote.
Well, I would think because they thought he was a good candidate, not because he was black.
Well, that had to happen after their eyes were opened up, and hip-hop was what brought us together. Mm-hmm. Hip-hop's what took down a lot of those boundaries. Sure. Music did that.
I speak 50 words of English. I speak 50 words of English. I speak 50 words of English. And I got 10 mil in the bank. I speak 50 words of English. And I got 10 mil in the bank, Jank. You speak 100,000 words of English. And you ain't worth jack. Because you ain't got no crack. I speak 50 words of English. And I'm worth 10 mil in the bank, Jank. You speak 100,000 words of English. And you ain't worth jack, crack.
Ha ha ha. Sorry, I couldn't resist. I was listening to this rapper, this piece of a soundbite of a rapper on some show on television saying that it was rap music that gave us Barack Obama. So I couldn't resist having the guys play my 50 Words of English parody. I thought you'd enjoy it. Oh, welcome back to the Savage Nation. I hope you're enjoying the program so far. We're talking about this and that, and I'd like to go to the callers immediately since so many of you have been holding for so long. And you can join the conversation by calling 1-800-449-8255. Some call it the greatest show in the history of talk radio. I would tend to agree with them. Ken in Sacramento on KSTE, welcome to the program.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I attended one of your shows about 10 years ago, and I've been waiting a long time to see you again. I hope you come live in the Bay Area.
Well, I am on the 8th, I don't know, September, I'll find it for you in a minute, at the Marin County Civic Center. We're going to do a live performance Saturday, September 22nd at the Marin County Civic Center. Which show were you at, Ken, and when? Do you know?
I saw the Name 'Em and Shame 'Em show, which was a follow-up to Try 'Em and Fry 'Em.
Oh, my God. Name 'Em and Shame 'Em. Do you remember the venue? Where were we?
You were at the Civic Center, and quite honestly, I still have the poster. I purchased the poster that day.
It's a classic, and I got to tell you something funny. I came up with the phrase name 'em and shame 'em, and if you remember, we had pictures of we had cardboard cutouts of Hillary Clinton on the stage. Do you remember that?
Yes, and several other politicians.
And several other notable politicians. I think we had a Sox Berger up there, the one who burglarized the National Archives and is now a lobbyist for China. All of the good folks in government were on the stage in cardboard. But my event was called Name 'Em and Shame 'Em. And you want to hear something ironic, and I'm using the correct word? When I was banned from entering England by the illegitimate bastards in England who put my name on the list, internal documents said we're going to name 'em and shame 'em. We're going to name 'em and shame 'em. Somebody in the U.S. was in cahoots with the illegitimate in England. Do you know that? No, I think I know who it was, Ken.
Yeah, that is ironic.
Yeah. They took my exact words and got even with me for putting their poster on the stage, Ken. You got to understand there are some very powerful people out there trying to destroy me. But, hey, it's in God's hands at a certain point. That's all I can say. So, will you come down from Sacramento to the Marin Civic Center on September 22nd?
Absolutely. I'm still a card-carrying Paul Revere Society member.
Oh, my goodness. You're one of the originals.
It's in
well,
my
Ken,
hand.
you got a pleasant surprise coming, which is a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. Now let's go to the other area. By the way, we could do news. There's loads of news out there. I mean, I don't know if you want to hear any of it. You want a little bit of Romney? You want to hear a little Romney? Or it gets you weak? I don't know. Speak softly and carry a big stick. Speak softly and carry no stick. Some pulp, no pulp, more pulp, less pulp. It's like going to buy orange juice. The same thing with a candidate. They don't know whether to have pulp, no pulp, some pulp, more pulp. Romney's being told appear as a pulpless candidate. And he says, well, people today are like a natural juice, so put some pulp in an occasional speech. Well, how about if we give them an entire orange? And no, because then it's too much pulp and they can't digest it. Then the next speech is no pulp. It's like I bought orange juice, Tropicana. So the container says some pulp. Then the other says no pulp. The other says lots of pulp. It's amazing to me how they did the demographics now. I wonder if you broke it. I wonder if you broke it down by Democrat versus conservative versus liberal. Who wants more pulp in their orange juice? It's an interesting one. It's a hard one to call on that one. Honestly, I think Democrats are health fanatics, and they want a lot of pulp. I'm not sure though, and conservatives. It's very hard to define that one. But I think it's the same thing as buying orange juice as buying a candidate. Some pulp, no pulp, lots of pulp. Like they were sold out of the lots of pulp in my local market, so I had to take a no pulp. And I felt like I was cheating myself every time I drank the orange juice because I know I was being denied the pulp, which contains most of the beneficial nutrients, aside from a little vitamin C in the sugar water there. Okay, I only buy sugar-free products. But if you're buying orange juice without pulp, what are you getting? It's like sugar water with a little vitamin C, fundamentally. So instead of being sucrose, so it's fruit sugar, it's fructose. So the pulp is the whole thing. That's the fiber. Everyone knows that. So that was sold out, and it's a very liberal area I live in. So there, that's my conclusion. Liberals buy more pulp. A pulp full orange juice, liberals buy it. Conservatives are afraid of pulp. It somehow threatens their colon. It's it goes back to the... Sorry, I'm getting distracted here. No, I would think that a conservative... when you say conservative, like conservative, I think of a guy like in a Western hat with a string tie with cowboy boots from Arizona in the 60s. That's a conservative, like really rednecked and, you know, tan. Like a Barry Goldwater is a conservative. You don't envision conservatives for what... I mean, they it's really stereotypical. But that kind of guy, that cowboy, if he even drinks orange juice, it's got to be no pulp, I would think. Because if he has, like, pulp would somehow threaten his colon health. Who's in the colon colon cleaning? That's a liberal thing, isn't it? Conservatives would never, ever go for that the colon enema thing. That's a very liberal thing. That was very big in the 70s in the health food, in the health doctoring world. Coffee enemas. Remember that phase? Insane. Totally insane. Do you remember the 70s when quack doctors were administering coffee enemas? You remember that? Now, I was a new doctor of nutrition at the time with a PhD from Berkeley, so I was very rational in a field full of quacks. And I advised against coffee enemas. And people said why. I gave them reasons why, rational reasons why, which I can't repeat here on the... I mean, I can. It's not. There's nothing off color about it. Forget about the mechanics of the coffee enema. Let's put that aside. That unto itself is one thing. But that's nothing new. I mean, the enema has been around a long time. That was once very big in the Victorian era. But the idea of injecting such a high dose of caffeine into your colon worried me, frankly. It's like I was totally... I'm going to show you something. Let's start with the rational. Then we'll get into the comedic and then the political. During the phase, the heyday of calcium as a supplement, I was opposed to it. You're taking a form of calcium that may not wind up in your bones. It may wind up in your arteries. They looked at me like I was nuts.
Savage.
In the coming days, I think you all know, the Supreme Court will rule on the president's health care law, which are driving up health care costs and making it harder for small businesses to hire new workers. And unless the court throws out the entire law, the House will vote to repeal whatever is left of Obamacare.
Let's hope and pray that the court will love the Constitution more than it loves broccoli, and that we will have a decision that is based on the merits and the Constitution of the United States.
We're all expecting the Supreme Court to rule on the Obamacare law any day now. In other words, socialized medicine for all. Whichever way the Supreme Court rules, it's sure to cause confusion throughout the healthcare industry owing to Obama's confusion. Our lives are going to be wrecked forever. Joining us right now on the Savage Nation is former Deputy Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Dr. Tevi Troy. He's going to give us his opinions on what may happen with Obamacare and what needs to be done. Dr. Troy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. Thanks for having me on today. It's a real great pleasure.
In your opinion, what happens when the Supreme Court strikes down this socialized medical law?
Well, if the Supreme Court votes to overturn the Obama health care law, the general public will be in better shape because the behemoth Obama health care law will not be implemented, and the costs won't go even higher, and the employers won't be dropping employer-sponsored coverage. So it could be a bullet dodged by the American people. If the Supreme Court upholds the Obama health care law, it does not change the fact that the law is still problematic, expensive, clunky, and will not solve the problems it purports to solve. So regardless of what the Supreme Court does, the entire law still needs to be repealed and replaced with better market-based reforms.
What do you think they should do?
Well, first of all, the Obama approach was, I would say, hubristic. It was overly ambitious. It tried to do everything at once. I think we would need to have, instead, a series of targeted, more modest reforms that address the real problems in our healthcare system instead of trying to do everything all at once. These kinds of reforms would have to be market-based, so you need to have a more flexible market. People perhaps could purchase insurance across state lines. You could unshackle HSAs, which are health savings accounts. At the same time, you need to give individuals and states more flexibility. States need to have flexibility to experiment. Individuals need to have flexibility in order to get the system and the type of plan that works best for them. And then finally, of course, you still need to have safeguards for individuals, for those who can't get insurance, to give them the help they need to make sure that they are treated right and get the additional assistance.
How would they do this?
Well, when President Obama came in, he made a big deal about the problems in our healthcare system, and he's right to point out that we have many problems in our healthcare system. But trying to overturn everything at once, as he did, is not the way to go about it. I think we need to have, as I said, targeted market-based reforms. I think you need to give individuals more freedom and flexibility to purchase insurance. I think you need to fix the tort system. I think you need to have reforms so that you can have out-of-control lawsuits and defensive medicine governing the practice of medicine. That would save, according to the Congressional Budget Office, $50 billion over 10 years. So I think that is one smart targeted reform. Again, purchasing across state lines, health savings accounts, association health plans. The ideas are out there. They've been talked about for years, but they have not been pursued in a serious way. I think the time now is to pursue those kinds of plans.
What can we expect to see in the next few years?
Well, I think in the short term, if the law is either overturned or part of it is overturned, I think you'll have a lot of confusion on the part of the implementers who will wonder how much to implement, and I think the implementation process might slow down for the overall law. That's not a bad thing, because I think the overall law is extremely problematic. I think whatever happens, it will affect the politics of the situation and the two candidates in the race. I'm a Romney supporter, but the two candidates in the race are going to be talking about this. I fear that President Obama, if it doesn't go his way, will criticize the court, which I don't think is the right approach. I don't think there should be either high fives if your side wins or criticism of the court if your side loses. This is our constitutional system. This is how it plays out. So I'd like to see a kind of responsible reaction to whatever happens on Monday or Thursday, whenever it comes out.
What can we, the people, do?
I think the people have actually done great work in this healthcare debate. I think they made their voices heard multiple times during the 2009 at the August recess when congressmen went home and they went to their town halls. People came out and spoke against this behemoth approach to healthcare. I think the people spoke in the 2010 election when they got rid of the Democratic majority in the House and tried to change things in the Senate. That people are unhappy with the direction that the Obama health care law took. I think that people need to go out there and keep making noise about this issue. Explain there are many problems in our health care system that need to be fixed. People do like their employer-based coverage and want to keep that, but there are ways to fix things for the people who are not in employer-based coverage or for the people who are on Medicare and Medicaid. There are ways to make our system better, and I think the people need to continue to speak out in order so that they can be heard and these right types of reforms and changes need to take place.
Well, what's next?
I think whatever happens, the Obama health care law is unsustainable and cannot remain in place. If it happens when the Supreme Court overturns it, that's one way. If the election goes a certain way in 2012 and the people overturn it then, that's another way. Or further down the road, when people realize how fiscally unsustainable it is and Congress says we've got to stop and change this. So no matter what, the law is going to have to change. It cannot remain in place. And so I think we need to start thinking about the more modest types of reforms done in a bipartisan way that actually improve our health care system and get people the health care and health coverage that they need.
Where can we read more?
My website is www.tevitroy.org, www.tevitroy.org. I work at Hudson Institute, which is a think tank in Washington that has all sorts of good policy ideas.
Dr. Tevi Troy, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Love Savage Nation. Always great to be here.
I'll be right back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Even common sense was not present in the health food movement or the nutrition movement at that time. It was filled with extremists. And most of them, I was thinking about them today, they're all fanatic. 99% of them are fanatic liberals. Even though they don't understand, it's the liberals in Congress who want to destroy the health food industry. The people who live on the vitamin in the vitamin industry are phenomenally left-wing, even though they don't realize that it's the left-wing that wants to regulate them out of business. Now, go figure that one out. Because I can name them. I remember them. I was thinking about them today. People I knew in the 70s in this field. All phenomenal left-wing Colorado Democrats, California Democrats. They don't even realize that their best allies are the conservatives and the libertarians who want to leave them alone because, you know, give people some freedom of choice in medicine. They have no idea what they're doing. They're stuffed with vitamins and marijuana. They haven't any idea what's going on around them. It's the marijuana destroyed the whole society. And now we're finished altogether with the legalization under the guise of medical marijuana. The country's finished. It's over. And who pushed it? You see, I know this. I know who pushed medical marijuana as a concept in two states. That's right. The most evil man in the history of the world. In the most evil man in the history of American politics, in my opinion, is George Soros. That's a political opinion. And I argued with one of his spokesmouths about 10 years ago when they were trying to push a ballot initiative in California and in Arizona to legalize marijuana under the guise of medical marijuana. I said, all you're trying to do is dope up the population so you can manipulate them. You know I'm right. Intuitively, the minute I said it, you knew I was right. Now I'll get the callers. You know it's good. I have cancer and I'm doing better. I heard all of that. Then take Marinol. Take the active principle. You're doing it because you get to smoke dope in public and insult people. Mainly, the 99% of the people who are using medical marijuana that I know in San Francisco that I see, let me qualify it. A large majority of those using medical marijuana in San Francisco, amongst the people I have noticed, do it to offend people and to get high in public. That's my statement on the issue. Okay, write that one down. See if you can sue me for saying it, for giving you my opinion on the issue. I mean, what is talk radio about? Is it not? This is what I don't understand. I am in talk radio. I'm not on NPR. NPR is like, now let's go. Okay? Everything is quiet and everything is like undercurrents. Talk radio is brazen. It's out there. It's overt. It's opinionated. It's meant to shock you. Not solely shock you, but I have to make statements that shock you. Isn't that correct? So how can you crucify me for shocking you with a statement like that that I just made? Huh? How can you do that? And yet every day of the week, people try to crucify Michael Savage for saying things in a medium in which he's supposed to say things he believes to be true. Okay? After all, I'm not a philosopher. If you read the periodicals who write about me, I am what they say I am. I'm a shock jock. You can't take me seriously. The real serious journalists are people like John King on CNN or Dan Rather. He was a great serious journalist. Or Tom Brokaw. I mean, he was a serious journalist, wasn't he? Or Friedman from the New York Times. Now, there's a serious journalist, isn't he? No, I'm just a shock jock. So why are you shocked by the statements I make? I wish it were over. Could I vote early? Can I vote early and repeatedly? Because that's what the Democrats are doing. That's what Eric Holder's entire job is, to make certain that as many illegal aliens vote as often as possible. And he dares to say to the states that are trying to stop them from being on the voter rolls that they're somehow racist. It's fattening. It's illegal. It's immoral. It's fattening. How dare you take people from Mexico off the rolls just by dint of the fact that a large percentage of those that you took off the rolls were from Haiti and Florida indicates you're a racist. Now, does that make sense to you? Could it indicate that the largest number of fraudulent voters are Haitian in Florida, not that the largest number of people who were taken off because of racism? Is that possible? Or his mind doesn't work that way? The answer is, when the mind that alters all. William Blake wrote that. So if your mind is structured so that you see everything as racist, you see everything as racist. If your entire life has been built upon the premise that you're living in a white racist society, even though you're president, or that you're attorney general, but the whole world is out to get you, but now you're the top cop in the country, but you still think it's a racist world, then does that make you a whack job? Does it make the world racist? You have to figure that one out. Pennsylvania, Kevin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Dr. Savage, thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to comment on what you'd said about coffee enemas and the people that do colon cleanser.
Wait, you want to comment on what I said about coffee enemas?
Yes.
Oh, okay, go on, because some people didn't even hear you. Tell us about coffee enemas, if you will.
There's a book out. It was written by a former Navy urologist, Balkenbach. It's called Prescription to Nutritional Healing. And in the part there that talks about dietary fasting, it says how our bodies go through cycles, and periodically they build up toxins. Why not, instead of overloading your body with food, give all your organs a rest? And it talks about the coffee enema and how coffee in that way stimulates the liver to throw off toxic bile.
Have you tried coffee enemas?
Of course.
And what has it done for you?
Well, here you go. 4 years ago, when I was 48, as far as health-wise, I swam 5,000 meters nonstop. I can get into a pool, health-wise, I'm a great...
No, 5 years, I mean, I can't hear you. 5 years ago, you did a coffee enema, and what happened?
No. As part of my keeping my body clean, coffee enema being part of a fasting cleanse, I'm healthy, I'm on my game, I'm alert, I can go long without rest, my people at my work, I'm 52 years old, I work circles and go, they can't believe it, and I don't tell them.
But you ascribe all of this energy to coffee enemas?
Sure, because it helps your liver get rid of toxic bile, and the liver is the filter of the body, that's part of it. There's other parts of it as well, but a colon cleanse...
How do you account for the fact that primitive man often lived long and healthy and was virile without coffee enemas? How do you explain that?
Well, I don't know about that. I'm just talking about for me what works for me.
So in other words, if Abraham had a coffee enema, he would have lived to 200 instead of 120. If Moses had coffee enemas, he'd still be with us. In other words. Oh, come on. I don't know. Look, it's an individualistic thing. I just say drink 3 cups of coffee a day and take it in through your mouth and let it go at that, okay? I'm going to show you like pulp, no pulp, some pulp, lots of pulp in various and sundry pieces of sound. Here's Mayor Napoleon Bloomberg defending his ban on large sugary drinks in clip 13. Let's hear clip 13.
You attract enormous attention for what you're trying to do in health. There was smoking. There was trans fat. Now there is sugar and sugary drinks. What is this? What is it that drives?
Charlie, stop right. Charlie Rose is a pimp for the establishment. No one listens to him except politicians. He goes to the Bilderberg meeting. He's a propagandist for the Bilderbergs. Let's put it to you that way. A propagandist for the power structure. He is the establishment's mole and mouthpiece. No pulp. Now let's listen to Bloomberg. Let's hear if he has pulp.
Okay. We're not here to tell anybody what to do, but we certainly have an obligation to tell them what's in the best science and best medicine says is in their interest.
Whoa. But you want to outlaw the drink. What are you? See, here it is lying. See, here's Bloomberg got caught with his pants down. The man has no problem at all with certain, let us say, illicit substances being legalized in the city, but he's attacking sugar and caffeine. Here, play another Bloomberg.
Sugar seems things to have gotten a bigger attention when you start talking about sugary drinks and the size of the drink and, you know, the big magazine, these big newspaper pictures of you as nanny.
Yeah, but that's just because it's the story of the week. That'll get blended into lots of other things.
No, it won't get blended into a lot of other things. You're going to be remembered for being the putz who attacked soda. That's what you're going to be remembered for. That's the history of you. In other words, if you look back on the history of New York mayors, they're usually caricatured by one image that sticks forever. Giuliani will be remembered, for better or for worse, for 9/11. Bloomberg will be seen forever as a Napoleonic figure with a large sugary soda cup. If I were a cartoonist, I would show a gigantic cup of sugary soda with a little mayor pointing at it saying, "You're banned." That would be the cartoon that I would draw. Tiny figure of a little mayor pointing at a finger with a cup of soda 10 times his size saying, "You're out of here. You're banned." That's how it'll be remembered for the next 100 years. No, it's not going to be forgotten. With all the problems in New York City, the murders, the crimes, the rapes, the drug dealing, and I have to go on and on, you're attacking a soda? As I said, you're going to ban big sodas. Why don't you ban Jeroboam's of wine, Mr. Bloomberg? I mean, by the same logic, you say you want to defend, you want to help people. Health-wise, I don't drink sugary soda myself, but that's my personal choice. But if I were poor and I was at a ball game and I went with a family of six, let's say, and I didn't have unlimited money as you do, Mr. Bloomberg, I'd buy the largest soda I could at the lowest possible price. Likewise, the largest tub of popcorn at the lowest possible price instead of small portions that look very good on the Upper East Side. Tiny little portions. Like at a museum opening where you might serve popcorn to be like, you know, daring. but it would be in a small cup, like a mini cup to show. Oh, how cute. Look, he's serving a prol drink. He's serving a prol food item, popcorn at an art opening at the Metropolitan Museum, but it's in a small portion to show you're cool. But the poor guy buys a big portion because it's cheaper. So the only motivation you have here, in my opinion, is that you're catering to the caterers, the purveyors, rather, of the sugary drinks and the popcorn people, because they'd rather actually sell smaller drinks at higher prices. That's how it looks to me as an outsider. I don't use any butter on my popcorn. If I eat popcorn, I love corn. It's the greatest thing ever given to us by the people from the from the region where corn came, and it came from the middle America, as you well know. It's Central America. It was hybridized from a grass. Originally, the corn husk was nothing more than a large husk in a grass, and it was hybridized over a long period of time into corn. And now we have the case where it's one of the healthiest foods on earth, corn. And now you have Napoleon Bloomberg wanting to ban corn. It's unbelievable to me. Here's clip 17. Tell me if this has no pulp, some pulp, or a lot of pulp.
We have gone to a society where everything's fast food, everything's high calories, and the average person today is much heavier than they were. Airlines have a problem that customers can't fit in the seats anymore. Obesity is becoming the single biggest health problem in America, and will kill more people than smoking in a few years.
Why is it that libs hate fat people so much? They're disgusted by fat people. It's actually a physical revulsion they have for the fat. It's like the anti-obesity is an obsession.